Hello, Omaha. Welcome to Omaha Talks. I am your co-host, Parker Steele, here with co-host
Brandon Herbel.
And today we have guest Omaha artist Sharon Manhart. Say hello, Sharon.
Hey, guys. Good to be here.
Sharon, welcome to Omaha Talks.
Thanks for having me, guys.
We invited Sharon to the show because she is a serious, awesome Omaha artist and good friends with Brandon. You guys have known each other for a while?
Yeah, it's been about, 4 or 5 years now, I think?
At least.
Okay. How'd you guys meet?
I think you started coming to River City Social Club, the shop that I used to own, and just became friends off of that. And I remember giving you business advice as a freelancer myself, telling her, like, charge more. You deserve to be paid more for what you're doing.
Get paid.
I really enjoyed going to that gathering because there was a lot of local artists that were working as full-time freelance artists or were professionals in their field. And it was really nice to throw them some projects I was working on and ask for simple advice of pricing or how to approach my communication with clients. And it was really invaluable, even though it was mostly a barbecue or a pizza party. It really ended up being a really good business meeting and making some good contacts in town.
That's awesome. So going into a little bit of your history, Sharon, where are you from? How'd you get here?
I was born and raised in Erie, Pennsylvania. It was a small steel town on the lake, and the economy has always been pretty bad since the plants started shutting down. I went to trade school in high school because I couldn't afford to go to college. My grades weren't good enough, but I loved art and had aspirations of being able to do it for a living, so I took commercial art in high school. When I graduated, I ran a sign shop in a grocery store, a nice grocery store out on the East Coast called Wegmans. And I did that for about 5 years, and that was extremely influential into what I do now. I had a boyfriend for a few months that came to visit his family out in Omaha that moved here to work at the Corps of Engineers. Mm. And he decided to move out here. He said there was outdoor skate parks and great music and great art and lots of job opportunities. So after just a few months of dating him, I asked if I could go with him. And I moved out here in March of 2002, I believe it was, or 2003.
Wow. So that's a pretty good sell.
It is.
On his behalf.
Yes. You know, give me those skate parks.
It's a great thing. See, I mean, you know, we talked about this before. Brandon and I are from Grand Island, you know, so this was kind of the metropolis of Nebraska. We were dying to get here, you know.
It was just went to college and I wasn't feeling it. I was like, well, I definitely don't want to go back home.
Right.
And Omaha's the biggest city or thing to offer. Still close to home, but I have a lot to offer.
I just love to hear that from people from other areas in the country because we're recognizing how cool this town is and that it is full of opportunities for artist types and others. I mean, not just artist types, but I think that's awesome. I love to hear stories like that. So let's talk a little bit more about trade school. So Erie, Pennsylvania, didn't have the grades for college, wound up in trade school. Let's talk about that.
My 11th and 12th grade year, I went to trade school for commercial art. So half the day I had English class or math class, and then I went to commercial art class. And as Brandon knows very well, I'm vehemently opposed to technology. So any of the computer projects we were required to do, I would literally cut and paste them. So my teacher was fairly upset with me for that, but she realized that I was still finishing the projects and turning in good work without using the computer, so she knew that if there was a way to make that happen in the real world, that I would figure it out.
Sure.
And I gotta say, years after, I believe it was 4 or 5 years after I graduated from that school, I was asked to come back and teach lettering to the kids in that class to be able to show them I'm a real working artist that used what I learned in this class, and I make money at it, and I'm able to sustain my life. So
I bet that was awesome.
It's very important to me to be able to communicate with kids that are in school that are incredible artists, but their parents say, well, just get a degree.
Sure.
Because you're never going to make money as an artist.
Right.
But I think teaching kids that if they can figure out a creative way to monetize what they do, mm-hmm. or if it's just an important part of their outlet of creativity and they need to keep doing it on the side, don't ever let go of it.
That's awesome. I totally agree with you. You know, Brandon and I kind of had the similar situation growing up in Grand Island where it was just like, what do you want to do? Mm-hmm. Now, this guy was really good at capitalizing on his skills.
He's a hustler.
Yeah, he is a hustler. But I, on the other hand, was just like, I have no idea, you know, artsy fartsy, but I had no idea. And really didn't have any kind of aspirations of pursuing a career. Like, that reality didn't even exist in my head.
And it doesn't to a lot of kids. And I think Omaha is something that really, a lot of my community of fine artists and mural artists, I have a couple of girlfriends, Maggie Weber, shout out to my girl.
Absolutely.
She is also someone that works with the youth in this area. She works diligently with nonprofits and different communities. And she shows these kids, you know, how important it is to be creative and how it brings people together. Murals bring people together. Music brings people together. It's just really important for a strong city to have art and music.
Yeah.
Tying them
together. I want to bring up something briefly about you and skateboarding and teaching girls how to skate. That is something super awesome you do as well.
Let's go.
So another one of my good friends, I actually met him the day I moved to Omaha. His name is Conan, and he's still a good friend of mine. He's one of my oldest friends besides Dave Nelson, also somebody that I met when I first moved to Omaha through skateboarding. Conan started teaching a bunch of the young girls that came to Robert Skate Park just how to turn on the board, how to stand and push, little things like that. And the mothers really loved it. When he told me about it, I flipped out and just said, I have to be a part of it. Whatever I can do to support you. So I started going to Robert Skate Park to kind of help him out. There was a lot of girls that were showing up. And then I was able to kind of take hold of that for a couple years. And we were able to go down to the bay in Lincoln and do some indoor skates over the winter. And I think one of the most important things I saw with these girls is that they were determined to accomplish these things no yeah. matter what happened. Mm-hmm. I had a young girl who fell into the bottom of the large bowl at Robert Skate Park and knocked the wind out of her chest. Mm-hmm. And she was just sobbing to her mom, and she was really worked up about it. But she came over to me when she calmed down and she said, I got to try it again before I leave. And she landed it. She rolled That's in awesome. And she kept it going. And one of the girls actually ran for, I believe it was class president or secretary or something. And she ran on the premise she wanted to teach the kids in her class what she learned through skateboarding of how to fall and get back
Damn.
Up.
Damn. You see, I know, the ripples, ripples of taking time out of your day yeah. to invest in a kid. And you know what? That kid will never forget that.
No.
She won't ever forget that. That's
I'm friends
huge.
With all of the moms on Facebook, and I see the little girls in their swim team classes, and some of them are just creative artists. They've really taken a hold of drawing and followed in their parents' footsteps. Some of the they're just creative, and they're out yeah. there, and they would show up skateboarding in tutus and sparkle shoes. And those were some of the girls that were the best. You don't have yeah. to look a certain way. You don't have to be butch or like a little boy to be able to skate. You can be right. a girly girl and be one of the best skaters out
Kick
at the
ass.
Park. So, yeah.
I think that's so cool. And, you know, even if these kids didn't become, you know, skaters, mm-hmm. they got attention from people that were investing their time and saying, yeah. you can do this.
Yep.
You know, get back on the horse. Let's do this together. And you get, that's huge. I think that's so awesome.
The community they built with each other, I would regularly just stand back and watch them and get choked up.
Yeah.
Because these girls were clapping for each other and hooting and hollering and high fives and hugs. And it was just this, it didn't matter if you lived in Midtown or Dundee or West Omaha. They came from all areas of town and they knew each other because of skateboarding. And they really pushed each other. And it was incredible to see, it didn't matter where they came from. It was the sport and the camaraderie that really kept them.
Man, that's awesome. Yeah. And, you know, I would argue that, you know, those kids wouldn't necessarily be the types to play volleyball or to hang out and play, you know, like, mm-hmm. and kids fall through those cracks, yeah. you know? I was one of them.
If you're a little bit different and yeah. you're not necessarily, which is honestly why I feel like trade school was so important to me. The kids that were in trade school were the kids that acted out in class, the ones that couldn't control their tempers. They were kids that grew up with no attention from their parents. They didn't have any money. They had children when they were 15, 16 years yeah. old. They graduated with experience doing electrical and masonry, and they could yep. get a job in an auto body shop with 3 years of experience.
Yeah.
And these girls were able to take care of their children right out of high school, going into a salon with 3 years experience already. And it's not a degree, it's not a substitute for college, but it gives you a head start.
And it's a certification, it's something on a resume.
And what I really feel strongly about trade school is maybe they hated all 3 years of it and they said, I do not want to be a stylist. I do not want to be an electrician. And then they could confidently make a switch into something else. Whereas if you pay for 4 years of a business degree and then you decide you don't want to go into business, you have debt. And with trade school, you have a zero balance.
And that's when, you know, the federal government says, fuck you, pay me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, you don't like being a business major? Fuck you, pay me.
Yeah.
Oh, you can't find a job, you got to go back to school and have another.
Yeah, you got to get your master's degree. You know, and before we started tonight, Sharon and I were talking a little bit about trade school because I am also a product of trade school. I went to Pine Ridge Job Corps and was that kid that was, you know, high school just didn't work for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a weirdo in a small town and it didn't work. And through trade school, yeah, I mean, I was there with people of every ilk and we were in it together. And although I went to trade school to be a certified nurse's aide, which I am not now, but it was important because I left that place with a certification and confidence that I could do something.
Yes.
And it does put you through the ringer.
Yeah.
But I totally agree with you, the importance of trade school. And especially now, kids listening, it's good to have something, a trade, something that you can do. It doesn't have to be your ultimate passion or what you want to do for the rest of your life, but I mean, wouldn't you agree that it's awesome to have a skill or something that you don't have to pay for? You got to pay for it with your time and your energy, mm-hmm. but it's not something that's going to weigh you down. It is an attribute.
Being able to work with your hands, I think, is essential. And kids that go through school that are coddled, that are given things and don't have to actually do work around the house or do work in school, you know, technology is wonderful, but when you stop working with your hands and your brain and like your hand-eye coordination, you are out of touch with what you can create with your hands.
Sure.
And I just think that's incredibly important. You know, technology in the world of graphic design is still a mystery to me, even though I work so closely with it for so many years. I admire what everyone does, but I want to be dirty at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I want to be sore. I want my back to hurt. I want my knees to ache. But that's why trade school, I think, is so important, because there's kids that went to my school for graphic design mm-hmm. and they were able to get a kickstart and, you know, go into college saying, I already know how to use those programs. And by the time they graduated, they just excelled above and beyond. So,
yeah, that's awesome. And, you know, the world needs electricians. The world needs
Omaha
carpenters.
Needs trades.
Yes.
This city's
yeah,
growing
absolutely.
So much. And I have friends that are looking for jobs out of college that, you know, I know friends, I work on construction sites all the time. Mm. What I do is a trade. And I'm on these sites and these people work long, hard hours. They get there before me, they leave after me. But they make good money.
Yeah.
And they are, some of them are at the top of their game. And
yeah.
when you reach the top, sometimes you start your own company and then you hire other people yourself. And the amount of growth that is in this city and being able to work with some really good clients in Omaha and hearing the rumors of what's coming up. If I had enough friends that were electricians and masons and carpenters, I hear about all the jobs.
Right.
You know, they're desperate for workers.
Absolutely.
So on that point, why don't you tell us what you do? We haven't really gotten into that.
Yeah, let's talk about you, Sharon. What's going on? What do you do here in town? Let them know.
Well, I'll start where it started, just so that I can kind of come to where I'm at now.
Yeah.
When I was working, before I started the tattoo shop back home, I had done a few tattoo shop windows, painted a few signs for small local businesses. So I'd kind of started that helping a business brand itself. They would do some of the artwork, I'd create the lettering, but it was very much a side job. It was just something I did to help them out because I loved to draw and paint. So then that got put on pause for literally almost 20 years. Okay. It was a good 15 plus years.
I mean, it was right when we met, when you were starting, you were doing chalkboard art and things of that nature before.
In a coffee shop.
Yeah.
Yeah. I worked at Liquid Courage in Omaha. When I lived back home, I researched what shops there were here, because if I was going to move to a shop here, tattoo shops can have either phenomenal or horrendous environments.
Okay.
And I wanted to be sure that I was in one that would kind of be a good landing place. And
yeah.
I found Liquid Courage, which was full of post-punk hardcore kids and kind of the people that I grew up with.
Yeah.
So I felt like they were basically people that were my family in another city. I went there and I dropped off my portfolio, and Jonna said, well, we're not hiring. And I said, do you just want to keep it here until you are? Because
yeah.
I had no, and she was surprised, but I had no interest in working anywhere else.
Right.
They were the shop.
Yeah.
So that was it.
Shout out to Devin and Jonna. Great people.
And shout out to being an advocate for yourself. Because
yeah.
that's how you get things done.
Yep.
Well, you know, there was a lot of shops in town, and even from just doing online research, I really felt like Liquid Courage was where I felt like my people were. Jonna called me 2 weeks later and she said, how's Tuesday? And I said, Tuesday for what? And she said, do you want the freaking job or what? Like, that was how I got
yeah.
hired. But I was there for a little over a year and a half. And I have to say, they were my brothers and sisters, aunts and uncles. I mean, they were, it was just an incredible environment. But they aren't just tattoo artists. They're parents and
yeah.
husbands and wives and brothers and sisters. And they mothered me and fathered me and picked on me like crazy. And
yeah.
It was really what I needed when I
was here.
It
was what
you
were looking for.
Yes.
I've been friends with those guys for, pushing 15 years. And, mm-hmm. yeah, it was like as soon as you became friends with one of them, you immediately gained, like, 10 or 15
yes.
brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
Like, you've got a new family that's going to
mm-hmm.
be there to protect you and
yep.
help you and, yeah.
The moral support
to
get
you.
Through. Yes.
Right.
But that was part of
it's a sign of affection.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I was there for about a year and a half, almost 2 years. And I left because I was going through some personal things. And I feel strongly that if you're a tattoo artist and you can't give 100%, you shouldn't be doing it. If you're going through something really traumatic in your life, it works itself out in your customers. And I just don't think that's really fair to your customers. And I respected them enough that if I was a mess, which I talked to Jonna afterwards, and she said, yeah, you were a total mess. So I needed to just take a step back and do some nurturing to myself. And when I did that, I got into doing faux finishing for about a year. I did some painting after I left Liquid Courage. Then I worked at every coffee shop in town.
Okay.
I started a wedding floral business with my best friend, which I did for 12 years and still do occasionally. Through working at the coffee shops was really where I was able to network a lot with a lot of the up-and-comers in the city. The coffee shop I was at, Aromas Coffee House, Autumn Pruitt, is an angel among us. She's amazing. We were right next to Huddle. We were right
mm-hmm.
downtown in the old market that
yep.
had all of these new, Flywheel was up the street, and the people that were working with Flywheel were coming in. And I would hear about all these new things that were starting. So I started doing her chalkboards, and then Sarah Baker Hansen, who also I credit her with starting my business, she did a small story about the chalkboards that I did at Aromas and some of their renovations, and I got a couple phone calls, and it just started with, oh, do you want to come do ours, or we wanted to do something on the outside of our building. And it was really, it started slow, but I eventually had to step down from being a manager at Aromas. And then I had to go part-time. And at one point, I had enough phone calls and enough little jobs on the side. Autumn said, do you want to just take a sabbatical and kind of see how it goes?
Yeah.
Because my availability was becoming more and more limited.
Right.
And she was...
It's a very diplomatic approach.
Exactly. Yeah. And what's really amazing about her and how she nurtures the people in her shop, she wants to see them succeed, even if it's not at her business.
Yeah.
And she was able to allow me to dip my toe into self-employment without saying, if you're not going to give me 100%, you're gone. Mm-hmm. She loved seeing somebody else create something. So I was able to step away, and she said, if you need it, come back and work a couple shifts and pick up some extra cash. But that was, I think this next summer might be 3 or 4 years. So
wow.
I've never gone back.
Was that's the awesome. Benson location the first wall you ever painted?
I hate to say I don't even remember. It's when it started and I committed to doing it full time, it was like an avalanche. And I don't really remember. I know Oxide Design was one of the first big jobs that I got. And Drew Davies, God bless him, he told me, he said, I will be one of the most difficult clients you ever have, but I will help train you to deal with these challenges that you'll come up against with other people. And I recently finished a project working with him again, and it is for a organization called Future Forward that is working in the North Downtown area. And they own a lot of the old warehouses and abandoned buildings down there. And they're looking to renovate those and turning them into usable spaces, especially for makers and artists. And a building that I just finished painting is called the New North Makerhood. And the sign itself is almost 600 square feet. It's a large mural about 3 or 4 stories up in a very cold area.
Yeah.
On the east side of the building.
Oh, man.
But it was really a huge blessing to be able to work with Future Forward. Lynn Ziegenbin is really wonderful to work with. She has worked with Kiewit for decades, and she's a big part of this process. But I'm excited to see what's happening down there, because what's happening at Bench and how Ben Peterson has turned that into this little hive. That's exactly what they are. They're hives. Mm-hmm. And our shop that we have is also a small hive, and it's just creatives. You can be building a moped or building jewelry or building pottery or woodworking, but you're all making something. And when you can walk in a room and say, should this be bigger or smaller or brighter, or it's just nice to have that energy in the same space. So
that's awesome.
I feel extremely blessed to be on the projects that are coming up.
I was gonna say name like 5 or 6 of the buildings. I mean, you've got
that's exactly what I was gonna say. Yeah, let's talk about your work. Where can people see your stuff?
Hotels and businesses and restaurants. Yeah. Like, let's hear it.
I still have to say, every phone call that I get, every message that I get that somebody wants to hire me for a job, I hang up and go, oh my God, I can't believe I get to do this job. Like, I'm still in shock that I get to do this stuff. And I think when you lose that, you shouldn't be doing it anymore, because you're not giving that same excitement to your customers. But I do have to say, the Blackstone neighborhood has been like, oh gosh, they've just been such a huge support of small business, and they've given me a really great opportunity to help brand that neighborhood. And that's been something, you know, Green Slate and the Blackstone neighborhood and everybody down there has really, they've helped pay my bills for the past 3 years. And they've given me some landmark jobs, like the Blackstone murals, which were also designed by Oxide Design. They're just large black murals with very graphic white lettering.
Mm-hmm.
They're landmarks. And I can't tell you how overwhelming it is to scroll through Instagram and see people taking their graduation photos in front of your signs.
Oh, yeah.
Or, you know, one of my favorite projects was working with Grain and Mortar for Coneflower Creamery, which is another one of my favorites. And that
in episode one as the best ice cream shop in Omaha,
according
to our guest, Rachel P. Grace. It's in the book. Just had to throw that out there. All right, I'm sorry to interrupt.
Brian's phenomenal, and Thai iced tea ice cream at Coneflower Creamery is like nothing else in this universe.
Oh.
But my husband and I fell in love at Ted Wally's.
Okay.
So they will always have a place in my heart.
What did you have to eat when you guys, what's your go-to ice cream?
Oh, at Ted Wally's?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, I just had their strawberry sour cream with their Dutch chocolate, which was out of control.
Oh, God.
My husband is a Dutch chocolate every single time, but I think he got the mint chocolate chip. There was a special mint one that they had that was outstanding. They have a Guinness ice cream that's incredible, Bailey's. I mean, 10 Mollies is just the jam.
Yeah, it's hard to, yeah.
Well, and, you know, it's ice cream.
Yeah.
I've said this for a long time. The worst ice cream I've ever had in my life was fucking incredible. Yeah. And I ate all of it.
Yeah,
I ate all of it, you know?
I don't know that I've ever not ate all the ice cream that I've
had. What are you doing? Yeah. What are you doing? I'll save it for later, as in 2 hours from now. Yeah, okay. All right, I'm sorry, Sharon. You keep
Blackstone
going.
Has really been wonderful.
Well, and to name a few, so Coneflower, Scriptown, Meatball,
Oxide, shop. The Meatball Shop.
Which we collaborated
ground
on.
Ground Floor Guitar. Yes, Meatball. In a pinch, literally within 24 hours, Brandon helped me with a new design for the Meatball Shop. So
that's awesome. I didn't know
It was a, Brandon, I need some help. This needs some adjustments. I need a little bit of this and a little bit of that directional signage. And he threw me like 3 different options. We picked one, tweaked it, make this bigger, make this smaller. It was awesome.
He's like, so easy to work with.
Most of the time, it is almost wonderful. And then moving down the line, I've been able to do some work for Early Bird, which is one of my most recent projects down in Blackstone. And Jamie and Cody are awesome. Their food is, if possible, even better than them. You guys got to go check it out. I work with Omaha Neon a lot, and they did a big neon piece in the middle of the mural that I did in Early Bird.
Sweet.
And it's just a great addition to the spot. You know, being part of people building their own business and them walking up and seeing the sign for their business up or the painting inside of their space that is going to be in the background of pictures, it's overwhelming. Like, I've cried with clients before because, like, we're just so exhausted and excited and, you know, at the end of the line and ready to open the doors. So,
yeah, I mean, you're creating murals and things that are going to be like memories and photographs that they've taken. And I mean, it's, I mean, not to say that, you know, like the Instagram photo, but it's like the stuff that people are taking pictures
of. It's an organ of that body. Yeah, I mean, exactly. It's the skin of that, you know, and restaurants and businesses are living organisms, I feel, you know, and it, and that's super cool. I mean, how does that feel? Let me pose a situation to you. Okay, you've got a friend from out of town, all right? And I'm just hypothetically, okay? Or somebody that maybe you don't know as well, and you're driving around, and they're like, oh, what have you worked on? You're like, oh,
I take them down Farnham Street.
And what's their reaction?
We actually did have some friends in from out of town, and walking down Farnham Street and just saying, that one, and that one, and that one, and that one, in every direction.
It's something you probably don't notice in the moment, but it's so surreal taking a step back and realizing, like,
and when you show it to someone else, it is like these walls, like, I've touched all of these walls, and I've seen people dealing with fighting for their permits and their, you know, trying to get their occupancy permits and, you know, having equipment shut down and waiting for their coolers. And I get to see all of that process because I'm usually in there as they're getting their place ready to open. So I always say that doing a large mural or a sign that's a struggle is kind of like giving birth. And then you see it grow up. And I love driving by a Coneflower, and they have got lines 30 people deep down the street to Sullivan's. And it's like 45 degrees outside. Yeah. It's not even remotely warm.
In a place where they can all go to the grocery store and buy a bucket of
there's
Blue Bunny or whatever.
There's grocery stores in every direction from there. And there's McDonald's a block and a half from there. Like, people could go somewhere else, but they go there for the experience, for the quality. I mean, it's just, I can't say enough good things about what's happening in that area.
So let me ask you this. Does that just really reinforce your initial impressions of Omaha?
Yes, because it's not, I don't know, I would say of the businesses that I've worked with, a lot of them are friends. A lot of the design agencies, Secret Penguin, is, I work with them all the time.
Okay.
And it's an absolute joy. And I've seen people get hired by them and then go on to freelance afterwards and then worked with them in that capacity. But Dave is just such a solid dude and hires other solid, great people there that create, the branding is different than a logo, you know, and that's something that I learned from Brandon and also from Steve Gordon, which has been like a Papa figure of coming in and saying, like, this is different than that. This is, you know, you're not just handing them a sticker that they're going to put on the front of their shop. You're creating an experience. These colors are important. These patterns are important. And I learned so much from the design companies that I work with. And they've been incredibly patient with me as I say, I don't know what an AI file is. Can you make this a PDF? So they've all been really wonderful.
And I'd be right there with you.
Yeah, I know what it is now, but
okay. it took a
couple of years.
I can't even think of the amount of conversations that Sharon and I have had where she's like just talking about like what is this or how do you do that or like just so many questions or the frustrations of like,
how do I get into my email, Brandon?
Oh my god.
The importance of good design too. Yes. Like, you know, we've got to paint something on this wall, but I just don't feel that it's up to par and what can we do to like discuss, because that's the other thing too, like these restaurants or other businesses, they're there to be a restaurant, not an artist.
Yes.
So, you know, it's the importance of her and her, you know, her vision and what she does and her skill set to educate them as well.
Amalgamizing with the idea of what they're representing.
And I feel
you
very
do what you do, but let me do what I do.
And I feel very, very strongly. I am just a painter. And for the most part, I'm not a sign designer and necessarily a sign painter. Those are on a different level. But I'm a commercial artist. Mm. So 9 out of 10 projects I do have been created by someone else. I'm brought in to execute them because I could not design what they're designing, but they could not paint what I'm painting.
Right.
So we are a right and a left hand completing a project for a customer.
That's
so
awesome. So let's backtrack a little bit here. We talked about a good tattoo shop to work in. Let's talk about...
I'm not saying nothing bad about nobody.
No. Let's talk about, as far as like a bad tattoo environment. Like, you guys are tattoo people.
I have a few.
You're covered. And although I have a few, I'm just kind of curious. And what makes a good tattoo shop, which is what we kind of talked about, and what makes a bad tattoo shop?
I would say words that come up to the top of my head. First of all, custom, sincere, people that connect with their clients. I know you cannot be everybody's best friend. You can't be everybody's therapist. You can't drag a design out of everyone.
Because that's a lot of it though, right?
Is one of the big reasons I left. It's heavy.
When you said you couldn't put in your all, then you shouldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, makes so much sense, especially in that format. I mean, this is permanent in someone's life. And if you can't give it your all, then you just, you shouldn't do it.
I think
that was like a big point to make.
It's way, you know, what I do, even painting, it's semi-permanent. If you don't sandblast it or if it doesn't wear off over, you know, decades, it's there. But with tattoos, good chances are it's there when you're buried.
Right.
So I just respected that too much, and the reputation of the shop that I was at was just too big. I didn't want to bring that down.
Sure.
And, you know, when you're emotional and customers come in and they're emotional and they need to be able to process what they're going through with you, you have to be steady.
Yeah.
And my biggest example of that, I had a really, really sweet guy come in, probably in his 20s. He was a car salesman, looked like a really strong, built, steady guy, came in a suit for his consultation, and he wanted to get an angel on his arm. Mm-hmm. And it was really simple. He just said, half sleeve, angel, nothing too crazy, some rays out the top. And when he came in and I had the drawing, we got to work, and I said, do you mind me asking why you got it? And his brother had committed suicide the year previous. And, you know, a lot of times artists won't ask why.
Sure.
Because they don't want to open Pandora's box, because that's what it is.
Right.
But I never learned that. So I asked him why. He told me his brother committed suicide. And I said, do you mind me asking, was it depression or drugs or what took him to that place? And he said, well, my parents died a few years ago and it never really sat right with him afterwards. And again, I could have stopped there, but I said, what happened with your parents? Were they illness, car accident? And he said, well, my mom died, my dad died right after him, and it was really hard on our family. And I said, that's so sad. I know that happens a lot with older couples that they can't go on without each other. And he goes, yeah, that's true, but my dad murdered my mom and committed suicide.
Oh.
So I was sitting with this kid who was the only living member of his family. who I was tattooing an angel on him that he believed was the angel that looked over him that still kept him alive when his whole family was gone. And I can't tell you how many days, it was the majority of them, I sat in my car after work and cried on the way home, because I've got a guy named Michael who was stabbed to death by his girlfriend and his sister got a tattoo for him. There's a young couple, they got a baby rattle with a banner with a date on it. And I said, oh, you know, this is how coming up on the birthday. Well, the baby was stillborn. So I couldn't absorb, you know, 7 out of 10 tattoos were memorials and just these devastating circumstances.
Much personal stories behind the tattoos. Yeah, don't even really think of it.
And the people that I worked with were also highly emotional and very empathetic.
Yeah.
But they maybe were in a place in their life that they could be stronger to not let that absorb into them.
Yeah.
I had only been tattooing for probably maybe 2.5 years when I started at Liquid Courage. My heart was just open for everybody. Like, yeah. I wanted to have them over for dinner and be their best friend. And you can't do that with multiple people a day, multiple days a week.
I mean, I totally understand that. excuse me, earlier I was talking about being a CNA and why I just wasn't cut out for that, because I feel like I can't shut that empathy off.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. And I was working with people that had no problem clocking out at the end of the day. And I was just like, man, these people are sick and like sad robots. And alone. What? And then yes, everybody else is, and God bless them for being able to do that. That's what we need, but not guys like me. That I'm like, hey, is somebody going to go talk to that old lady? She's been in there.
She's
in her
sad.
Room. Yeah.
Can you go talk to her? She's really sad.
Yeah. And I would get in trouble because I would go hang out and shoot the shit and just talk to them, you know?
Yeah.
And that was why I was just like, there's no fucking way I could go home after watching somebody die or whatever and just be like, ugh. Who's on the late show tonight? You know, like, no. What's for dinner?
When you say the difference between a good tattoo artist and maybe not a great one, the people at Liquid Courage, the ones that are still there and the ones that have started their own shop, all of them are just stellar people.
Yeah.
I have nothing but respect for their art, the way they conduct themselves in life. Like, they're just really good people, and they give every customer what seems like 110%. Even when I know that they're going through something, I still see them just gush over projects and they've got all these sketches for people, and they treat every customer like they're their only customer.
That's awesome.
And that is different from the flash shops where it's just like, hey, here's some hearts. Do you want to get one of these? Or here's some stars. I do have to say, there's a lot of great shops in Omaha now. I've worked with some of the other shops, and there is just phenomenal artists in this city. That just happened to be where I ended up 15 years ago and what had a really big impact on me. You saying about even being a CNA and needing steady people, I had an injury 16 years ago or so where I lost my eye in a traumatic injury, and the people that took care of me in the hospital, that's exactly it. They were just, you know, my eye was cut in half, and they came in and they're like, hey, sweetie, it's okay. We're going to take care of you. And, you know, they leave the room and they're just like, holy crap. Like,
it's... You can say shit. You can say shit.
I can't. Okay. My family and friends will hear this.
Okay. I'm sorry. We're filthy mouth kids from Grand Island. We can't help ourselves. Let's talk about that story. How did that happen?
Yeah, I was actually going to bring that up because you also, with tattoo conversation, did you not have a tattoo that foreshadowed what happened?
Oh, here we go.
So I know the whole story, but I asked her to make sure it was okay that we talked about it.
Yeah.
And yeah, I definitely.
So it was, I had broken my hand. I was actually trying to ride my BMX bike in an indoor skate park in Erie, which is not my thing. I used to race BMX, and that is where I did a lot better. Ramps are a lot different than a dirt track or riding through the woods. So I fell, broke my hand, had a cast. I had to stop tattooing, move back in with my parents because I couldn't work. And I had been through a lot, got the cast removed, and an artist came through town in Erie, and I asked him to do a girl that's just beat up on a skateboard. I was like, you know, I've always had a lot of injuries related to skateboarding, but it's still something I come back to that makes me feel good about myself and about life, and it's my therapy.
Yeah.
So he did this tattoo, And I believe it was just a few months after that, I was at a bonfire after a day of skateboarding out in Northeast in Pennsylvania. And I was at a friend's graduation party, and they were burning wood from the remodel of the shop that I used to tattoo at.
Okay.
Because the boyfriend worked there now. And I was watching the wood burn, and there was actually stickers from my booth that were burning in the fire. So it was very emotional.
Yeah.
But it was kind of clarifying because it was burning of that
ceremonial.
Part of my life. So one of the kids that was there was a bit of a jackass. There's my cuss word for the show.
Call the cops.
Yeah.
and can edit it out.
He put a case of empty beer bottles on the fire, and it had snowed earlier that day. It was really cold out, but the fire was huge because they were burning construction materials, and the bottles heated up and exploded. PSA kids, don't put bottles on bonfires. They explode. So the bottles exploded, and flaming glass shot out all over, but out of 17 people there, I was the only one that got hit, and I got hit in the face.
Oh.
So the people that had the party were kind of metal kids. They loved Rob Zombie and stuff. But I got hit in the face, and I held my hands over my face, and my fingers actually went in my eye socket because the eye was gone immediately. And I lifted my head up to the kid who was hosting the party, and I said, "Is it okay?" And he just goes, "Oh, shit."
Oh,
and
she said
He couldn't handle it. It was just really gruesome. So they took me inside, and I sat at the kitchen table, and everyone was a nervous wreck immediately, so they all lit up cigarettes. And I was like, "Hey, guys, I'm so sorry, but I'm allergic to smoke. Do you mind smoking outside?" And there's a mad rush for the door.
What a pain in the ass you are.
So they all went outside, and I had to call my mom, and it was 11:11 when I called her, which is her number, which is, I feel bad now, I've cursed that number for her. And I called her, and she literally said, "What hospital are you at?" Because just a few months earlier, I had broken my arm, and I had to call her to come, you know, see me in the hospital. So they were, I'm a very accident prone person, and growing up, broken ankles, twisted knees, broken elbows, I was a mess. So she asked me, and I told her, and I said, "Mom, I need you to pray for me. I think I lost my eye." And then I hung up the phone, and I went in the bathroom with the people there, and they got me a wet wash rag. And I remember I had my head down, and I lifted it up because I wanted to see what this looked like. And the edge of the mirror met right in the middle of my face, so I couldn't see it. And I just think
You're still at the house.
Yes, I'm still at the house. Yeah.
So how much time are we talking from explosion until this moment right now?
Half hour?
Oh, my
God. Maybe
20
minutes? I don't know. They lived out in, like, the boonies.
Okay.
Like,
okay.
To Omaha, it's maybe Bennington.
Okay.
Something like
that. And I'm assuming everybody's pretty loaded.
Yeah. They were clear enough to call 911.
Okay.
So they got the ambulance there. But on my way to the party, I had had onion rings and a vanilla milkshake from Burger King, and I threw all of that up in the ambulance, and I was apologizing profusely to the EMT because when I threw up, and then my eye would bleed more, and it was painful and gross, and I kept apologizing, and the guy laughed at me, and he's like, "You're fine. You just do what you gotta
We've
do.
Seen puke.
I'm paid to do this."
Oh, my God.
But yeah, then I got to the hospital and had a pediatric ophthalmologist or optical surgeon come in, and he was able to sew my eye back together.
Okay.
The two sides.
Okay.
It was completely empty, just a deflated balloon of nothing. And within a few days, it starts to fill itself back up. And then since then, I've had 8 surgeries.
Wow.
And I still have little to no vision. I'm legally blind, and I have double vision. So what vision I do have overlaps with my good eye. So I see 2 of you and 2 microphones. And
yet still is an amazing artist and is able to do what
Yeah, so the next time you're bitching about not being able to do something...
Well, here's what I gotta say, and this is where I thought of him a lot when this happened. I have a friend back home, Rob, who was an amateur skateboarder for Palo Peralta when we were all in high school. And he used to do backflips and gymnastics at the local, like, demos and stuff when we'd have skate companies come through. And he got into a scuffle with a kid in his high school, and the kid threw him down the steps and broke his back.
Oh, my God.
So he was a quadriplegic.
Oh, my God.
From high school on. And this guy went from gymnast and semi-pro skateboarder to I'm never going to walk or feed myself again.
Ugh.
He is now a teacher at his college, teaching metalsmithing and jewelry, and he raises his daughter himself, and he drives and walks confidently with a walker and has made countless pieces of art and music. And so I always say to myself many times over, it could be worse, it could be worse. And if this guy can say, I still got to walk, I still got to take care of my daughter, I still want to create, do it. So it's just, I think you are only limited by your own attitude towards things. And I never wish any traumatic injuries on anyone, but when you lose something huge, I mean, like, mm-hmm. if you have an arm amputated, or if you lose one of your eyes, or if you lose your hearing, you have to look at it as, I still have another one, mm-hmm. or I'm still breathing, you know, I can still tell my family and friends I love them.
So, oh, man, that's awesome.
It's, yeah. and, but it's such a simple thing, like, I don't think anything of it anymore.
Right.
I had to go to therapy to learn all these things, so okay. don't think I'm just, like, enlightened.
Hey, I go positive. To therapy and learn things all the time. I'm right there with you, yeah.
We gotta cut this because I'm getting teary eyed.
Oh,
I know. I swear to God. I swear to God, I was never gonna choke up.
Yeah, it's so inspirational and so amazing to like hear the story, and I'm so thankful for you like coming in and sharing this with us.
You guys.
What do you got going? Let's talk about where.
Notes. Just yeah.
Give us yeah. A, what's going on? This is you guys. The mic is yours.
Aaron. Okay. So, I've been through a lot the past few years, and I've learned a lot. Number one, if you're creative and you're passionate about what you do, be very careful that that is not your main focus. If you're in a relationship, if you are close to your family, make sure they get the attention that they deserve, because otherwise, you'll get more joy out of your work than you do people, and that rift is really hard to come back from. I just got married a couple months ago.
Congratulations.
Thank Congrats. You very much. His name is Edward Manhart, and he's lovely.
He's handsome.
Good looking chap.
He's a tall drink of water. he actually owns his own moped shop. He had a phenomenal job doing body work.
And what's his moped shop's name?
Ed's Moped Shop. 43rd and Leavenworth.
There you go.
We just work really well together, that we're both very dominant and type A, but we support each other to no end. And he was able to quit his full-time job and open the moped shop, and it's thriving. It's doing great. You guys should go check out the mopeds. They're a blast. There's a really good community in Omaha, too. But I just got to say, always make sure that if you're going to work late, give extra attention to your spouse when you get home, or your kids, or your parents, or whoever you're around. You can give a lot to your job, but make sure that people are always at the top of your priority list.
Gotta balance that out.
Yes. Yeah. So this winter, I've been able to finish a lot of big jobs outside this year, and I'm looking forward to being inside.
Not that you
Not
are.
Out in the 20 degree weather.
Were you outside today?
No.
Okay.
No,
oh,
but
man.
Last week for the past 7 days.
Damn.
So, I've got some really good projects coming up, and there's a lot of spring projects coming up too. So, right now I'm moving on to, I work with, the Old Market Mattress Factory, which is rebranding, and they've got some really great things coming down there, which is actually where we got married.
Okay.
They are launching a new look, and I've got a mural planned for the side of their building.
Cool.
In the spring.
Where can people, do you got a website? Do you have somewhere that people can go and see what you're doing or get a hold of you if they need some work done? Because I bet you do, Omaha.
Well, Arbor Street Studios.
Yes, Arbor Street Studios is the name of my business. It's also my Instagram page. If you go to Arbor Street Studios on Instagram, you will see a lot of puppies and a lot of mopeds and a bit of painting. So it's my personal and professional page, but I think my professional one got hacked and I couldn't figure out how to fix it. So
she can't read her she can't access her email, so let alone yeah,
I still use Hotmail for crying out loud.
Oh my God.
Anyways, moving on. So you can go to Instagram. I also have a Facebook page that's just Arbor Street Studios. My email contact is on there and phone number are both on there too. So you can reach me through sending me any messages.
And we'll post a link as well, guys, so you can find that really easily. Well, Sharon, is there anything else you'd like to throw out there?
I just want to say that I know you guys are both guys and you're both friends, and that's wonderful. I do have to give a shout out to the local girls and internationally other girls that are in the sign painting world, because it was fairly started by men. It's a male-dominant field, and the women that are able to join it and thrive in it have all my admiration. And there's a few in Omaha, and there's tons all over the world. I was just part of a show in Chicago called the Pre-Vinylette Society.
Okay.
And it was all female sign painters from all over the world that came together, and we had a weekend of an art show, sold all the pieces, went to good homes. We talked about the struggles we have that are things that we come up against.
Mm-hmm.
Job sites can be challenging, and mm-hmm. we don't want to be treated like little girls, but we also, you know, you don't have to treat people like jerks either. There's mm-hmm. there's a happy medium where you just treat them like humans.
Right.
You know, I'm there to do the same job you are. Yes, I know how to put up my ladder. Yes, this is my business. Yes,
if I need a hand, I'll ask you.
Yes. Yeah. So that's awesome. I got to say to the girls of the world out there that want to do something that is non-traditional, go for it and find your support group. Find your friends online. Find them, you know, down the street, wherever they're at.
They're
and
out there.
Yeah, meet for coffee. Go to job sites. Do whatever you can to be able to push each other to keep your head up and keep
be your own advocate. Yes. Advocate for yourself.
Yes.
I think that's awesome. Well, Sharon, this was a great conversation. I hadn't met you before until today, but I thought it was great. I love talking to you. And, Omaha Talks listeners, we'll definitely have some links up so you can go see Sharon's work. And we will also keep you informed if there's some new murals going up, because we like to stay in touch with our guests and keep our stuff going. And just really quick, you know, that's what Omaha Talks is about, is humans treating each other like humans. And that's why we're doing this whole thing. So we appreciate you guys listening. Brandon?
What's up? I don't have anything else to add. Yeah, I know. This was a very great, inspirational episode. I mean, I've known Sharon and I learned things about her that I didn't even know. So, yeah, this is awesome.
All right. Thanks for listening, guys.